بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In all aspects of our lives, it is quite safe to see what was the way of the Salaf, pious. And the way to look at our Salaf is to look at it with a clear mind, not to look at it to support our stance or to support our opinion. Clear mind. In this situation, what was the response? How did they react here? What was the response to this situation? So Darul Dioban had some trouble, I would say around 1980s. So there was an old ustad from Bukhara, Maulana Hashim Bukhari, Rahmatullah Ali, also one of the Khalifas of the Sheikh Rahmatullah Ali, passed away in Medina and buried in Baqi. So Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah Ali explained, I feel these troubles that have taken place is on account of my sins. So at that time, in the whole India and Pakistan, you won't find a person of that caliber. The world is looking at him. A person like Hazrat Sheikh Muttala is referring to him. And when he saw the trouble there, then he says, I'm certain that it is on account of my sins. One Hashim Bukhari Sahib Rahmatullah, also a great saintly person, and for approximately 4-5 months he sat in Etikaf crying to Allah Dara that the conditions should correct. So he says to Mufti Sahib Rahmatullah, it was wrong of you to say such a statement, to make such a statement, that is because of my wrong that this has happened. Sahib explained, you say that it is wrong of me to say that it's because of my wrong that this has happened, whereas I have got some evidence for this. When there was some problem in some jihad campaign and the news of the fatah, the news of victory wasn't reaching, so Abu Bakr Siddiq radiallahu anhu is Afdal Bashari Ba'd al-Anbiya ibn Tahqiq, the best of all mankind after the Anbiya alayhi wasalam. And his reaction was, his response says that the delay is because of my wrong. The delay in the victory is because of my wrong. Otherwise, falsehood can stand before haqq. أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليسيره. So truth must prevail, but if truth is not prevailing, then it is because of some impediment, and it must be my wrong because of which I am not getting the news of the victory. In Saharanpur there was a similar situation. The students broke out into a riot. The Sheikh Muttar is alive, his forehead is disturbed. What's going on? And at the end of the whole thing, the Sheikh says, I'm convinced it is because of my wrong, one statement I made, and this is the consequence of the wrong statement that I made. Because there were some people that were saying that it is some of the students of the final year that are the catalyst to this problem. They are the cause of the problem. And as it says that it came out from my mouth, that it can't be my students. It can't be. It's impossible it's my students. The reason for this was perhaps, it says that from the beginning of the year, I kept on speaking to them about taqwa, righteousness and virtue, not getting yourself into trouble. So it cannot have been that they were the cause of all this. And then it turned out that they were the cause. So it says that it was my statement, the statement that came out from my tongue, can't be my students. So if you look at it from one perspective, it is a type of a pride. Mine. Can't be mine. So this problem has come about because of my wrong. So that is why you'll find this coming in the hadith by Ibn Amir radiyallahu anhu, that at the time of corruption, fitna, everything is falling apart, then wabki ala khatiyati, cry over your own sins. You may say, it's easy to say, well, he is the cause, he is doing this, and he is the cause for this. And to a certain extent, it is important to correct it, right? But there's a situation that it's important to correct the situation as well. Otherwise, then you are leaving out Nahiya and Munkar. But now, to do the Nahiya and Munkar in such a level that you forget the Nahiya and Munkar about your own self, then that is equally wrong. In fact, even worse. I saw your wrong, but the wrong that I'm involved in, the discrete wrong that I'm involved in, I am disconcerned. One person mentioned to Ustaz Rahmatullah Ali, I don't know what's going on with the ulama. How can they behave like this? What type of behavior, what type of example they are setting? So Musab's answer was, according to me, this statement of yours is a pure statement of pride. And then he went on to explain, he says, on the day of Qiyamah, like you expect Allah Ta'ala to forgive you in spite of your mistakes, then they also deserve the same. You feel that Allah Ta'ala will forgive you, right, in spite of your wrongs, then don't they deserve the same as well? Now, just to say, you know, what is going on, what they're doing, right? So, what that amounts to is that we are getting too absorbed in this thing here, and there's a nahiya and munkar on others, but what about our own selves? How much are we correcting ourselves? And if we are given corrections, are we accepting, are we prepared to accept it? Or we feel that the nahiya and munkar is only for others and we are perfect. And our Buzuganadin, like they were there to والحافظون لحدود الله, to protect the borders of Islam, then they looked at their own borders as well. Or at any given time, they're looking at themselves. Hazrat Walid bin Goy Sahib Rahmatullah Ali is explaining a hadith. لا تفضلوني على يونس بن متى, right? Then don't count me as greater than Yunus alayhi salam. Ulama-i kiram explained that Rasulullah mentioned this perhaps at a time when people got to know the story of Yunus alayhi salam and how he was swallowed by a fish, etc., right? So when they hear the story, it's likely that they begin to look down upon Yunus alayhi salam. How did he do this? And how did he land up in the belly of the fish? So it's possible, it's likely that the person that doesn't know the details, he doesn't know how to take the incident of a Nabi, he doesn't know all these things, all the details, then he may despise. And despising a Nabi will amount to disbelief. So to cover the whole situation, Abisam says, don't count me as greater than Yunus alayhi salam. So he covered it up, right? So he is so great that Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam himself is saying that don't count me greater than Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, how great he must be. There's other three, four explanations, but I'm just sharing one explanation, right? So the students ask Hazrat Gangoi Sahib Rahmatullah Alayhi, that how did Nabi Sam mention this? Whereas we know ke Adam woman siwahu tahta liwa'i yawm al-qiyamah. Adam alayhi salam and all the Anbiya alayhi salam will be under my banner on the day of Qiyamah. On the night of Mi'raj, then Rasulullah meets up with Adam alayhi salam in the first sama, first heaven, then with Isa and Yahya alayhi salam in the second, with Yusuf alayhi salam in the third, with Idris alayhi salam in the fourth, with Harun alayhi salam in the fifth, with Musa alayhi salam in the sixth, and with Ibrahim alayhi salam in the seventh, right? So he met up with all his Anbiya alayhi salam. So whether in the going up to the Sama or on the return, in both going up and the return was from Baytul Muqaddas. So the journey starts off to the Sama from Baytul Muqaddas, and the journey to the earth comes back to Baytul Muqaddas. So whether in the going or the return, Rasulullah was appointed as the Imam of the Anbiya, that you will lead all the Anbiya in Salat. And the hadith is obvious that Ya'ummuhum Akbaruhum A'azamuhum, who will lead the prayer? The one that is the best. Ya'ummuhum Ya'ummul Qawm Afdaluhum. So who will lead the prayer? The one that is best. So an indication that Rasulullah is the best. But then, with all this, then why did Nabi Sam have to say that don't count me as greater than Yunus alayhi salam? So the students are firing up the question. So Al-Mawal Gangoi sahab rahmatullahi answered, jo afzal hua karta hai, wo isi tarah se kehte hain, the one that is greatest, and this is how he says, he lowers himself. Man tawada'a lillah, rafa'ahu Allah. The more you lower yourself, the more Allah Ta'ala elevates you. So this is an act of tawasu and humility. Students won't leave him. Anyway, Mu'az has seen now the students are an inquiring mind, and they need to be given that satisfactory answer so that their minds are at ease. So Mu'az used one approach, they can't understand it. So Mu'az used another approach. So he says, how do you see me? As equal to you, as lower than you, or superior to you? Obviously superior to us. And if someone takes an oath, then on a fact, we'll believe him. If I take an oath, then how can you ever have a doubt that you, your maqam, your position, and then you are taking an oath in the name of Allah Ta'ala, then how can we ever have any doubt about you? I mean, he got them at this, says, now, I take an oath in the name of Allah Ta'ala, that I consider all of you, they're all students now. Why is the Qutubul Aqdab at that time? These are all students, right? Allah says, I consider all of you to be millions of times better than me. Now when Mu'az to say that, they all broke down. They couldn't hold themselves. All broke down. Mu'az very gently closed the kitab and he left. The next day when he returned, he says to them, kal ka sabak samajh mein aa gaya. You understood the sabak. So all has a doubt. So now you got no doubts. See. So one approach wasn't working. Mu'az had to use another approach. That these awliya, these ulama-i-kiram, these people of that level, then this is their status, this is how their minds work. And you can't alter that mind. That mind becomes like a yaqeen. That mind becomes like a conviction. And then they will emphasize this point here right from the beginning, right till the end. There won't be a point where they're not going to be thinking about themselves. Under the verse, لَا تَقْفُ مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِ عِلْمٍ. Don't pursue that which you have no proof. I got no proof for something, then I mustn't entertain that. See, I got a proof for something, then I will entertain the thought. But I don't have the evidence for it, then can I pursue that? So the ulama kiram explain, Imam Qurtubi explains, there can be two situations, right? For one situation, you need categorical, conclusive evidence. Now that is for aqaid, things pertaining to beliefs. Then you need categorical proofs, you need conclusive evidence beyond the shadow of doubt, absolutely categorical. So any article of faith is proven so clearly in the Quran and Hadith that there is no possibility of doubt, it's absolutely clear. But now this is with articles of faith. Articles of faith like the oneness of Allah Ta'ala, the attributes and sifat of Allah Ta'ala, then the truth of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, the truth of revelation and wahi, then the truth of the day of Qiyamah, Jannat and Jahannam. So this is proven through categorical evidence. There is no doubt about it. Any of the details of Qiyamah, details of Jannat and Jahannam, all these are proven. There is no element of doubt. And ulama-i kiram worked on these things here, explained. Like for example, now people ask that the deeds will be weighed on the day of Qiyamah. So people raised up questions that deeds are abstract articles, right? They are things that are abstract. Abstract means that you're doing something and that thing disappears. You made namaz. Can you preserve that namaz that you did? You did it and it disappeared into thin air. It's gone, finished. So you can't take it and preserve it. A material object, you can take it and you can preserve it. But this is not a material thing, it's something abstract. When it's an abstract, then how do you preserve it? So they answered that it doesn't have to have a physical self to be able to be measured, right? There are a lot of things in this world that don't have a physical self, but they can be measured. Like temperature, does it have a physical self? But can you measure it? Heat and cold, does it have a physical self? It doesn't have a physical material body, but you can measure the temperatures, etc., etc. So similarly, the actions can be measured as well. Like these things are abstract, in spite of them being abstract, they can be still measured. So this, so ulama-i kiram explained all these things here, pertaining to beliefs. That you mustn't have a shadow of doubt in articles pertaining to belief. لا تخف ما ليس لك به علم. Now there's a discussion about all these things here. Then what level of proof is required? So, you know, in all things you get the extremist. So one group went and saying that you need that type of proof, that you need to all those discussions that the people of Kalam had entered into, you know, La Ayn, Wa La Ghayn, all the finer nitty-gritties. Then only can you be a true Muslim. And if you don't know those nitty-gritties, then you cannot be a true Muslim. But the ulama rejected this. Said in that case, there'll be just not even a handful of Muslim left. All the nitty-gritties, the philosophical arguments, scientific arguments, you go into all that, then you won't even have a handful of Muslims. Then what level of proof do you need to be counted as a Muslim? There are two categories of people. One is that category as a simple person. A simple person, he's got simple proofs to convince him about the truth of Allah Ta'ala, the truth of the Quran, the truth of the Hadith, the oneness of Allah Ta'ala. That is sufficient for him. The villager says, Al-ba'aratu tadullu al-ba'id. When you see dung, and that is evidence that a camel walked past, or an animal walked past, right? وَالْمَشْيُّ تَدُلُّ عَلَى الْمَسِيرِ. And if you saw footprints, then that's indicative that someone walked past here. فَهَذَا الْأَرْضُ ذَاتَ الْفِجَاجِ وَالسَّمَاءُ ذَاتُ الْأَبْرَاجِ كَيْفَ لَا تَدُلُّ عَلَى اللَّطِيفِ الْخَبِيرِ. then this magnificent planet that we're living with thousands of systems, so many systems in this world here, the solar system, the lunar system, the animal life, the plant life, the sea life, the bird life, the insect life, the reptiles, you count and count and count, and each one for his own life, own itinerary. So many systems working with such beauty, how can they ever have come of their own? There must be a magnificent creator behind this. So now this level of reasoning was sufficient for this person. He is convinced with that proof, so it's enough, right? See, we're coming to the verse, لا تقف ما ليس لك به علم. Why? Don't pursue things that you have no knowledge of, because إن السمع والبصر والفؤاد كل أولئك كان عنه مسؤولا. The act of the eye, the act of the hearing of the ear, right, and of the heart, all are going to be accountable for. You thought, you know, I read something, I saw something, I'm not going to be accountable for. I heard something, I'm not accountable for. But the Quran Sharif is saying, what you hear, what you see, and what beliefs you entertain, the act of the heart, you're going to be answerable for. So now if you entertain the wrong belief, you're going to be answerable for that. So now, if it's a simple person, he's got that simple level of understanding, it's enough. But now, one acted like a clever thing, and he went into science and philosophy. When he went into science and philosophy, now, he shook up his beliefs. Someone is talking of evolution, someone is talking of devolution, someone is talking of monkey theory, someone is talking of rat theory, right? So a lot of things they're talking of. But now when they're talking about this, you went and read these things here, and reading these things here, it shook up your beliefs. When it shook up your right beliefs, then it's compulsory for you to study further, to go to someone and correct your beliefs. And that simple level of belief will not be sufficient for you, because you cause the damage. When you cause the damage to your beliefs, then go and rectify it. It was a small little dent, it was small, the tire that punctured, right? So you could have sorted out yourself. But now, the engine is jammed, then the car is dented, damaged. Now can you do it yourself? You can't do it yourself. Now, you want to make it roadworthy, go to someone that knows about it, panel beater, a mechanic, or take it to a workhouse or something, and get that thing sorted out. It was a small little thing, you could have sorted out yourself. Now, you have caused such a damage, so take it to some expert, he will go and sort the thing out, then it becomes roadworthy. You can't ask why, can't I fix it up myself? Similarly now, when you damage your beliefs to that extent, because you, of your own, went and read up these things here, or learned these things at school, university, whatever, but you went and learned these things. When you learned it, then you corrupted your belief. When you corrupted your belief, now it's your requirement to go and fix it up again, to bring it back to original, back to normal belief. I know sometimes you get doctors coming here wearing kurtas, wearing turbans, and after all that learning and whatever else, you see, Mona, what is your take about evolution? Now, wearing kurta, turban, in jamaat, etc. But his beliefs were rocked up and shaken up at school or the university level, and he didn't correct it. Now, after all this time here, now he wants to know, Mona, what's your take on evolution? See, that means his belief is not right. And when belief was not right, then I ask you, can anything be right in his life? All the action that he's doing, all the deeds, can they be right? So if you self-imposed an injury onto your belief, you can rectify it. لَا تَخْفُ مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِنِ. See that? Don't pursue things that you have no proof for. You went into that. See the Quran is saying, don't, got no proof of these things here. Up to now, they are saying that these are theories. They themselves are not saying that it is a fact. It's a theory. But the theory is presented in such a dynamic manner that it leaves a mark and impression in the reader's mind, the learner's mind. He is wondering now, hey, what's here, what's going on? See, such scientific language they have used and such a dynamic approach they have got. So there must be something in this. So as a result, that person's belief is corroded, corrupted. Now for him it becomes compulsory, go and correct yourself, go. Whatever it takes now to go and bring your beliefs back to the original. Why didn't you follow the Quran? The Quran says you got no proof for it, then don't follow it. You got sound proof, beliefs, categorical, conclusive, not the shadow of doubt. So that's the level of belief with your articles of faith. Now you will then disturb the articles of faith, so it's your responsibility to go and correct. Because you took the initiative to go and study these things here. You took the initiative to damage it. Now it's your duty to go and set it right. You damage it. Nobody forced you to read it. Nobody put the gun on your head and go and read this thing here, go and study the thing. You went and studied it, you went and read it up, so now you go and fix it up as well. See that inna sam'a wal basara wal fu'ada kullu ulaika kana anhu mas'ula. The act of the eye, the act of the ear, because the passages through which you gain your knowledge mainly is audio visual, right? Isn't it? Mainly audio visual. You get some knowledge through your senses, etc. But the main knowledge, audio visual. You can get some knowledge from your tongue also, right? Taste knowledge. You can say this is bitter, this is hot, etc. You can say that. But the main causes, main instruments of your knowledge is audio visual. Right? That's the two, and the third one is the heart. Because the heart, what's the work of the heart? The heart's work is to put the facts together and come and arrive to right conclusions, right? You said 2 plus 2. Now, who will help you to come to the right conclusion? Your mind. Mind will call it the heart. I said, alright, 2 plus 2 is 4. Therefore, 4 plus 4 is 8. Right? So, who does that work? The mind does it. So, the mind helps you to arrive at right conclusions. Or wrong conclusions, right? So now, don't you think that you're not going to be answerable for the act of the eye, of the ear, of the mind? You went to wrong conclusions, you won't rectify. So now, there's two types of thoughts, two types of proof. One is, I said, for one type, you need categorical. And the other type of rules and regulations you need, then you need strong proof. It doesn't have to be categorical, it will be strong. Right? The strong means the proof must be like overwhelming. It doesn't have to be conclusive. It must be overwhelming. When it's overwhelming, it's enough. Like, for example, we will say that you will not recite the Ameen aloud. You will recite it softly. So those that are saying that the Ameen should be recited softly, they got overwhelming evidence. Those that say that no, it must be recited loudly, they also got evidence. They got evidence. To us, this evidence is overwhelming. To them, that evidence is overwhelming. They go that way, and we go this way here. And we see over the years, 1400 years passed, there's no fight. Was there any fight? No fight for that. Because both respect the difference. You see, there are some differences that are negotiable. You can negotiate those differences. Like, you got the Haram Sharif Imam coming here, right? And he will do something his style. Perhaps he'll raise up his hands in namaz over the chest. And we will be fine, we'll be right with it. We will not object. Or, if a Shafi Imam is writing very, very beautiful, and he'll say the Ameen loudly, you will not object to it, right? Or, he will raise his hands at the time of going to ruku, right? We will not object to it. We will consider it our fortune to perform namaz with him or behind him. We will not make it an issue. So why? Because these are differences that are negotiable. But there are differences that are not negotiable. Right? There are differences that are not negotiable. When there are differences that are not negotiable, then we'll have to correct the person. Now again, you got the Haram Sharif Imam here, you got. And Maghrib namaz is reading 2 rakats. He says, no, I'm a musafir, so I'm half. So will you lead him? But he's a Haram Sharif Imam, and he's saying, no, la junaha alaykum an taqsuru fi salah, in khiftum an yaftinakum alladhina kafaru, right? No guna for you to half the namaz. So I'm still doing more. I'm supposed to do 1.5 rakat, I'm doing 2 rakats. So I could entertain that. No one, why are you not going to entertain it? You know why you're not going to entertain it. Right? So when it's not a negotiable difference, then you will correct the imam. Whoever it is, the imam, or the alim, or the sheikh, or whoever it was, but you know that difference is not negotiable, then you will correct him. If you can't correct him, then you will not be with him. Right? Now, for example, he says, no man, you know, I, now it's a fact, right? Some 1985 it was, right? So about 30, more than 35 years ago, right? So there was a Jamaat that just came in from the States. So they're seeing what's going on, right? So United States now, you got people coming from various nationalities, someone from Malaysia, India, South Africa, Bangladesh, right? So if you're living in India, for example, your direction in namaz is the west, right? India, all that. So they in the States, and they performing the namaz towards the west. Say, what are you doing? But we, our ulama say, you must perform the namaz towards the west. So you will accept it. They were very serious about it. And you're going to be joining them. So if someone says you're breaking the unity, then will that be acceptable? Acceptable. Because he's misunderstood it. It's a categorical thing. وَمِنْ حَيْثُ خَرَجْتَ فَوَلِّي وَجْهَكَ شَطْرَ الْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ. Categorical, clear evidence. No, nothing is obscure. Nothing is ambiguous. Absolutely clear. وَمِنْ حَيْثُ خَرَجْتَ فَوَلِّي وَجْهَكَ شَطْرَ الْمَسْجِدِ الْحَرَامِ. Face in the direction of the Qibla. So there you're not going to listen to him. You're going to move away from him. And they may say it a million times over that you're breaking the unity. We're not going to worry. We're not going to be worried about the unity. We will say you're breaking the unity. We will say, see, the ummah is going in one direction. The direction that we are following is the Qibla. So which wherever you are at the time, you will face towards the Qibla. You will not say, لَيْسَ الْبِرَّ أَن تُوَلُّوا وُجُوهَكُمْ قِبَلَ الْمَشْرِقِ الْمَغْرِبِ. You will not say east is the direction irrespective of where you are, or west is the direction. No, you will say that the Qibla, the Kaaba Sharif, is the jihad, is the direction. But you've misunderstood it. So you've broken away from the unity. We are still on the unity, you have broken away. So you need to set yourself right. See now how people misconstrue, you're breaking the unity, what you're doing. Someone is performing a namaz at a prohibited time. Normally people call it zawal, but I don't think that word zawal is right. Why? Because zawal means to move away, right? The sun's decline. What's the literal meaning? The sun's decline. So at the sun's decline, you're doing namaz at that time. When the sun's decline from the zenith, right? So you read the namaz at zenith, or when the sun has declined from the zenith. Now the decline, you decline, that is called zawal. But what you are saying that zawal means zenith. So zawal doesn't mean zenith. That's not a wrong istilah. It's going to us. The word is wrong, although the intention is right. But the word that they have chosen is not right. Once our Ustaz rahmatullahi alayhi had to join in one janazah namaz, and the janazah came in at about 12 o'clock at night. So someone is saying, hey, just wait for the zawal to pass, wait for the zawal to pass. So Hazrat said, hey, yahan par akal ko zawal ho raha hai. The brain is on a decline. What? The brain is on the decline. So, you see this. So who's broken, or who's broken away from the unity? The one that's moved away. This morning I was explaining to someone, when you're in a state of a confusion, right, one easy way to look for a solution is think of your great-grandfather. Someone who's over 70, you can think of your grandfather, and someone is say under 60, then think of your grandfather. Think of your great grandfather, right? Or grandfather. If Torah is over 60, right? Think of your grandfather. Then you will get things in line. If you see what's going on now, you will be off the course. But if you see what your grandfather did, 70-80% of the time, you will be on course. Because if you see your grandfather, what he did, right? If you see your grandfather walking hands in hands with your dadi in the mall, you ever see happening? You don't even imagine that. Do you entertain the thought? They're holding hands. How are you? The movie goes on. Do you ever think that? So you want to get yourself on course, think of your grandfather or great-grandfather. I don't say they were absolutely perfect, but they were closer to the truth than what you are. So it's a good precedent. You see them and you understand the picture right. Do you ever see your grandfather, right? Do you ever see them? If they got mehman and guests coming, your great-grandfather, all men, women, all sitting together and talking away. You never see that happening. You never see that happening. And you don't imagine that. My grandfather, my great, all the women are sitting, men are sitting, was happy and happy, laughing and clapping hands and all that, gee. Hitting a six and all that, gee. So they were doing all that. They weren't doing that. So you understand that was the right cause. This thing is all mixed up. See, if you trace back, you will see that was the right cause. And something went off at some point. And when it went off at some point, then we felt that, no, there's an adjustment to the law, so therefore we're doing it. So therefore you go off this. So if you trace yourself backwards, you'll see there was a lot of order, there was a lot of system, there was shame, there was modesty, there was some level of respect. Now, this type of things are very, very important. We think it's minor, it's small, right? But really, it's very, very important. You know, we talk of adab, etiquette, right? It may seem like a small little thing, but how important it is. Now, in the old it was, even you have reached 50 years of age, your father is alive, 50, 60 years of age, and your father is alive. Obviously, you may be living with him or near him, right? So if your father is alive, then you will tell your father, Abba, I'm going here, and I'm going for this work, and my expected return is this. And the ones that were even more considerate, they will not just inform the father that I'm going here and I'm expected to come back at this time. So, Abba, I need to go here. Can I go here? And I'll be returning at this time. And I know situations where they made all the preparation. Man is 55 years of age. With all the preparations, that I'm going to go. And at the 11th hour, the father said, no, cancel it. I saw the person do frown on the face about whatever you say, I'm doing it. I'm going at this time and I'm coming back at this time. Now we may think, why must we keep ourselves subjected to these old people now? Why? Why must we keep ourselves subjected to this old? But I tell you that you keep yourself subjected, then all the greater chances that you will be on track. And you break away from this, then you say, but why must he rule my life? He's not my father, he's not my uncle. So why must he rule my life? I must be able to do my own thing. Everything I must ask him, and go around. So that is where you are breaking away the shackle of Sharia. See, that was just to keep you online. It wasn't a Sharia requirement. But you kept yourself under bonds, and you kept yourself under bonds, you're going straight. But you broke away those shackles. You know, why? Why must I ask him? And when I'm leaving, why must I go and meet him? When I'm returning, why must I go and meet him? It's not a sunnah, no? It's not a faraz. So, why must I do this? So, I ask you, when you have that attitude, that why must I do this, then will you be closer to the fact, or you'll be distancing yourself away from the fact? You'll be coming closer, or you'll be breaking away from the track. I used to see Mustafa Rahmatullah very close, I used to see him. I used to think, hey, why is this man is doing this? Now, after years, you've seen the hikmat in that. Now it's a holiday period, everybody's free to do what he wants, right? But I would see, observe Mustafa Rahmatullahi, it's a holiday period, right? And he needs to go somewhere to a doctor or some meet a friend or something. As Qari Mustafa Rahmatullahi is the principal, right? He is not Mustafa Sheikh, he is not Mustafa Ustad, nothing, absolutely. He is just the principal of the madrasa, right? And we are not in the position to draw a comparison who was better and who was lower, who was inferior. But the general trait in our zamana was, Mustafa was about the most learned at the time. In hadith, in fiqh was the most learned, right? That was the general trait. But we are not in a position to draw a comparison. We will not say who is better and who is inferior. But because he is the principal, the Mustafa Rahmatullahi, if he needs to go somewhere, he'll go, and I would see it, I would observe it. He's sitting, I'll be sitting in Tashahud, and Qari Sahib Rahmatullahi, his style was, when he's absorbing something, he doesn't know, he's oblivious. He's gone so deep inside, writing something, but he's you can see, he's not a makeup. You know, someone tell me, like a makeup, you can make up on the face. Right? And someone is genuine, you can make out. There's no makeup. He is. And I remember one time, sometimes I think of my old memories, I still have regrets, you know. So I think Mustafa is sitting here for 10 minutes. How long is he going to sit here now? So I cough a little bit. But up till now, I have a regret why I did this thing. Qari Sahib Rahmatullahi says, oh, what? Tum yahan par baithe ho? Kya ho gaya? Come here, what happened? No, mujhe jana hai. Ijazat lene ke liye aaya hu. I have to go, I have come to take ijazat. Now you see how their thinking was. Their thinking was totally different. Now, I as a junior, I'm observing this. Can I show any disregard to any of my seniors? Now remember, tomorrow you got a child. And your child is observing. Like I was observing Mufti Sahib Rahmatullahi, what he is doing. So that thing printed in my heart. So now, that will have a certain effect. But your junior is going to see what you are going to do. And if it is in keeping with adab, they will do the same. Otherwise, well, I am my own now. Why must I listen to this old chacha here? Why must I listen to him? I could do my own thing. It's not a shari requirement that I go and ask him, all that. So let me do my own thing. You see that level of respect. It's a different thing, absolutely. It brings about a different flavor. That's called tawazu. That's called that humility. You got that humility, you want, you're moving. Well, you're moving very well. Mustafa Rahmatullahi is in Kanpur. And the whole Kanpur like love him to bits. Because they all gone off, right? He got them into Jamaat, got them into Tabligh, got them into Namaz, going to the Markaz, going for 40 days, 4 months. That was his initial habit. Then he got the madrasa running, students, top performance. So the whole town is buzzing. In the meanwhile, Deoband is desperate for a mufti. Mufti Mahdi Hassan was the previous mufti, right? And he's passed on. Now they're desperate. And they need Mufti Sahib to come in. Mufti Sahib says, no, I'm settled here, I don't move. Here, the madrasa must have maximum about 500 students. There is about 5-10,000 students. That is now the madrasa, Deoband madrasa is like world renowned. I'm talking about 64s, right? Mustafa had come to Deoband. Only 500 students here, 10,000 students, right? And here is world renowned, and you must come and take the position of the Mufti of the world, right? No. They're persuading him, whatever, but no. Not because the town likes him, right? No, but I'm here, I'm settled in the work here. Then, just for a little bit of recognition, etc., etc., they understood that this man will only listen if his sheikh doesn't suggest to him, commands him. What if the sheikh says, alright, do it, it's alright, better. So he won't listen. But if the sheikh commands him, then he will definitely do it. So the ulama of Deoband, they realized, what's the secret here? They went straight to the sheikh, be desperate. And unless and until you don't command the man, he's not going to listen. Sheikh said, my instructions. Now for this, mere paas koi jawab nahi hai. I got no answer for this. So you see, at which point they accept that recognition? They're not there of their own. Now, then he comes to a position of accepting Bukhari Sharif. Again, flatly he's refusing. So the previous muhaddis is Mura Fakhruddin Sahib Rahmatullahi. He passed about 73. He is a muhaddis. Now the whole of the world knows him, right? And that muhaddis, now he's seen, now he's aging, and he's instructing Mustafa Rahmatullahi. He's not instructing, he's appealing to him, he's begging. No, I don't want. That at last point he says, Mera burhapa ke upar raham khao, khuda ke waste isko kubur karo. So uska mere paas koi jawab nahi. Have some sympathy of my old age. I can't manage now, please accept it now. He says, for this I don't know. This of your old age I'm respecting, otherwise I don't need to do this. Because this is the most senior position in India, become the Sheikh al-Hadith, you become the Grand Mufti, you got that position, that honor, that respect, right? I don't want that. But when the man said that, you know, I am desperate now, you respect my old age, I don't have anything for now, no one to fall back on. At that point he accepted it. But you see this simplicity, this humility, what level of humility. Now, when they appointed him now, they brought him here to Deoband, and the place he's got to reside is Ihata-e Masjid. Now, how the masjid is, in the Deoband Masjid is, right, around the masjid, say just two meters away from the masjid, are the students' rooms. You know, like you have this masjid here, then you got this stoop, right? This is half the stoop, and you're getting students' rooms. There's rooms already. So now that place is a traffic area, very busy traffic. Students coming, going, noise, students how they are. But now he is appointed to the most senior position, Sheikh al-Hadith and the Grand Mufti of the world, right? That's the position he's been given. Now this place here, obviously, is not a place that you can think, you can reflect, you can analyze, you can see things in perspective, because the traffic is there all the time, noise, movement all the time. Anyway, he remained here for 6 months, no facial expressions, no frowning, absolute nothing. After 6 months, the Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullahi says to him that we have prepared the room of my grandfather, Mawla Qasim Sahib Nanuti Rahmatullahi. The room is available, it will be a pleasure that you come and take this room. Anyway, Mustafa went, moved up to that place. Now they ask Mustafa Rahmatullahi, were you happier in the old place, Ihata-e Masjid, or this new place that's airy, quiet, calm, composed? Were you happier? What makes you happy? He says, the thing that makes me happy is that my senior, Qari Tayyib Sahib Rahmatullahi, the principal, he is happy for this place, for me. He is happy, he is pleased that I stay here. That keeps me happy. But you see how their mind works. But that shows you the level of the humility. The level of the humility, it was at a different level altogether. And that's the thing that our Buzurganuddin wait for. When is that humility going to come and strike the person's heart? That you can start working with him. The namaz is alright, the first step is alright, everything is working. But that humility is not there. And Allah Pak is saying that the elevation is based on the humility. مَنْ تَوَادَعَ لِلَّهِ رَفَعَهُ اللَّهِ. You're going to lower yourself, that's the base. Get that right. Once you get that right, then you're moving. You see this Akabir, Buzurganuddin, and how they see things. We're talking of لَا تَخْفُ مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِنْ. Don't pursue things that you have no proof for. You don't have sound proof for. Then how can you pursue these type of things? Now you look at this electronics and the groups that you got, right? Now, how much of us that are seated here can say that things that are posted on the group signs, right, is categorical, or they are sound, maybe not categorical, but the proofs are strong? How many of us can say that? But then we subscribe to it, then are we going against this verse, لَا تَخْفُ مَا لَيْسَ لَكَ بِهِنْ? We don't have either categorical proof or good proof. Then don't pursue this thing. Why? Because inna sam'a wal basara wal fu'ada kullu ulaika kana as'anu mas'ula. You're going to be answerable to this. There was a sitting and people are talking against Hajjaj ibn Yusuf. He was a zalim, whatever you know, thousands of people he killed, right? Tabi'in, sahaba, he killed, but many people he killed, right? So now everybody is talking against him. Like how we have it, if someone is doing something, someone notorious, then we all speak out against him, right? So there's a saintly person that he seated there. He said, see, on the day of Qiyamah, Allah Ta'ala will make Hajjaj answerable for the wrongs he did. But if it is that in your discussing him, you all overstep the mark. It is, for example, he committed wrongs 500, right? And you all exceed the number to 600, right? Like Allah Ta'ala will hold him responsible for the wrongs, then your excesses also will be, you'll be answerable for this. His zulm hasn't made it halal for you to talk randomly about him. You can talk about him, but just to the extent of the wrong that he's done. He didn't give you a clear slate and talk about me as you please. No, he can't. Like he'll be responsible for the excesses, the wrongs that he's done. You are answerable for the excesses that you committed against that man's integrity. Though he's a zalim, but only to the level of his zulm. Jazaa'u sayyatin sayyatun mithluha. Wrong equal for equal. He gave you one punch, then that punch must be equal as the punch that you have received. He swore you one time, then you return the swear word exactly with the word that he is given. Now he saw you with your mother, right? You take him his granny and his grandfather and his uncle and the whole family. Is that right? Sheikh Saadi Rahmatullahi, we talk about him. But a very wise man. Very, very wise man. So now, a great part of his life was in traveling. So he lived 120 years. 30, 40 years of his years was traveling. Now he's traveling. He needs something to eat. So the eating place, they call that person a Bhatiyara. Bhatiyara, he arranges the food. He will prepare the food, whatever. So he went to this Bhatiyaran, woman, cook. So that's how they had it. So to serve the meals. In the meanwhile, this Bhatiyaran is having it out with that Bhatiyaran. This cook, woman cook, she's fighting with that one. You like that and like that and like that. This one says, you like that and like that. No, this Sheikh Saadi says, I do not concerned about your fight. I'm concerned about my stomach. You're having it out like this here. I'm starving. So she said, but you don't see what she's telling me. So all right, don't worry. I will sort you out. I'm on your defense. I will be your defense. So now she's anxious to know, right? How is he going to defend her? He said, you see. So this one is giving and then she kept quiet. And that one kept quiet. So now he's Bhatiyaran, the one that's going to cook. So you see, from Adam alayhi salam to the day of Qiyamah, all those people that swore or are going to swear, right? All those swear words are lumped in one sack. I'm saying all in lumped in one sack and on your head. So now she started giving again. So she said, don't you see yourself? Oh, no, see, all that is in the sack. Because I gathered all that, heaped into one sack, and it's on her head to finish. So if she says anything, that's also part of the deal. All on. See, there are people that come in the world, they will look for ways to reconcile and to suppress problems. And today is a time that people like not to suppress problems and not to wash them away, but they would like to see problems. They would like to see it. Who's giving it now? Who's catching it? And who's giving the shots? What's happening? So we entertain ourselves at the integrity of the next person. He is getting smashed down. When he's getting smashed, we are entertaining ourselves with his integrity being smashed down. Allah can reverse the thing. Tomorrow, you today, you are entertaining yourself with my integrity, right? Tomorrow the same thing can turn around. Tomorrow you're going to get smashed down and I will entertain myself with your getting smashed down. See, all the things just turns around. Just turns around. So don't you think that you're going to get away with either smashing someone's integrity or entertaining yourself with the next person's integrity being smashed down? Rather, a Muslim's work is, alright, how do we ride over this thing here? How do we bypass this and move on? You can see something happening here. And we can see that we can't control this thing here. What do? So the Quranic advice is, لَا تَخُدْ بَعْدَ ذِكْرَ مَعَ الْقَوْمِ الظَّالِمِينَ. That's the Quranic advice. That you don't be a party to this. You move away. You can see now that's a wrong, right? So in a wrong, it can be two situations. One situation is that you can stop it, right? It's your child, it's someone that falls under your influence, so stop him. But there's another situation that you can't stop the thing. You can't stop it now. What should you be doing? One is you're in control. It's your child, it's your subordinate, it's someone that falls under your influence. You can stop him. With your influence, with your might, you can influence, you can stop him. But it's a situation that you can't stop, no control. You can't do anything about it. In the Quranic advice, la taqud, don't sit there. That means don't entertain yourself, don't listen to it, don't entertain yourself, don't be party to this. Yesterday I was talking about Harun Sahib rahmatullah. So one of his khadims was here. So he's telling me some of the experiences that he saw. Now, there's so many good things that we can invest in. Why don't we go into that? The good the man does, it's a legacy, and can't we invest into that? I must speak out against him. He must smash him down, because my respect is to the extent that he smashed down. And the hadith is saying, the more you smash yourself, you'll be elevated. And you say, no, I have to work, act in the reverse of the hadith. I'll smash him down, and I'll go. So our brains are going off. See how what the hadith is saying? You smash yourself, and you'll be elevated. You say, no, I'll smash him, I'll prove that I'm innocent. So I'll be elevated in that way. Now look at this pious of the past. So that Khadim would take him for the dialysis to Al Qadi Hospital. Right. And that Khadim is saying, I know about this dialysis, right? Man, after the dialysis, 3 hours, he is totally exhausted. He can't, he just want to sleep. But Mawla will insist on the Khadim, at that time he can't walk because of the wheelchair. That you take me in the hospital, that meet all the sick people. And the 30 mistook sick people will go, give them some words of comfort, make dua for them and leave. But you see that he's squatting, right? And then he'll have a little bit of humor also, but there's a lesson in the humor. He says, now do the bank balance. What bank balance is for you, Mawla? The bank balance is this, that we met 30 people, right? And for every person that you met, you got 70,000 malaika engaged making dua for you. So do the maths now. Do the maths. Then give you another experience. It says, right. Now you're getting this load shedding and all that. So you got people buying generators, right? So one case came to Morana. Oh, this load shedding and all, right? So he's got the generator and he's got his windows closed. So everything is working in his house. Neighbor doesn't have the generator, so his windows are open, right? He can't stand the heat. So his windows are open. But now he's getting the brunt of his generator. That thing is roaring. So he's screaming about the neighbor, what the neighbor is doing. And the neighbor says, well, it's my property, I'm doing it, I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. But the case came to Maulana. Now look how beautifully he handled the whole thing. He said, we mustn't fall into this because this is politics. Then he said, you see, what is the Islamic mindset? Islamic mindset is that what are my duties towards my neighbor? The secular mindset is what are my rights? And the Islamic thinking is what are my duties towards my neighbor? If both thought like this, then it would have been a breeze in the park. Because this person here that's got the generator, he would have provided one line to his neighbor. Right? You also use, I'll use. So will he complain now? Hey, I'm enjoying it now. No lights, no fan. At least I've got one line, some fan I can work, and some lights I can work. My house is buzzing, alhamdulillah. Would you have any problem? No problem. But then you just need to adjust the mind a little bit and you get things working. But that is now the Islamic spirit. The secular Western spirit is now my rights. I'm always right. My right must be secured. Nobody was trampled. My right. See? See how, what a world of a difference in the thinking. So, this time is very limited. In this short time, what can we do? Then, he says, Mullah is passing, he's going back home. He says, oh, let's go through Brown's Avenue. We'll go home via home. Oh, the driver is telling me that, Khadim, what is Mullah via home, home? Hey, what's this? So he said, Mullah is very anxious for sawab. Any sawab, but he's very anxious, you know, very anxious to get it. And he won't feel shy to encourage you as well. So he said, no, you're going to Brown's Avenue, now you go by the Qabristan. You don't have to stop. But read some Quran Sharif, Trisham Kulwallah. You get one Quran sawab and pass it on. And let's move home then after. So that's our home also. And that's our home as well. But these people that belong to our home, Muslims that belong to our home, let's show some act of kindness to them as well. You see this consideration, kindness. Then he says, no, you know this poor vendors on the road, standing with hawkers and all, right? Hawkers, sometimes we're getting this people carrying the baskets, carrying baskets and all that. So, Mulana would do as though he's buying the whole thing. These people that be selling broom, someone selling fruit, or some other thing, 200 rand, all right? Give me that ticket, 200 rand. Now, I gave the 200 rand as though he took the thing, so all right, take the whole parcel and you go and carry on your business. Now, doesn't that sound nice? At that moment, that person already said, I sold my whole thing, I got my money for it. But now, isn't there an additional excitement? Hey, I got my things back. Or I said, I've only got 200 rand, I'll make 400 rand of this thing here. See, an additional sawab. You bring a cheer to a person, to a Muslim, to a human being, you bring some cheer. Allah grant us to feel.